Thank you everyone for joining us this morning for the Distributed Energy Resources Engagement and Progress Update session. I'm Christine Wyan, I'm a communications advisor at the Alberta Electric System Operator, and I'm just going to cover a few housekeeping items before passing it off to Rob Davidson, our Director of Customer Grid Access, who's going to be kicking off the session for us today. So Karen, if you don't mind just flipping to the next slide. So just off the bat, just to let you know that we are audio recording this morning's session and we will be making the session available to everyone at the iso.ca on the Distributed Energy Resources page on our website. That's also where you'll see today's session materials, including a copy of the agenda. The slides we'll be showing today, as well as the recommendation paper that we'll be reviewing later. As for how you'll participate today, Karen will just get you to pop onto the next slide. All attendees have joined the webinar in listen-only mode, and the host will have the attendee cameras disabled and the microphones muted. So we are looking for some your participation in today's session, and the way that you can do that is by asking or typing a question. Before you do that, we'll just ask that you state the organization you work for in your first and last name. And there are two ways to ask questions today. If you're accessing the webinar using your computer or smartphone, we have designated Q&A portions throughout the presentation, so there'll be plenty of opportunities for you to ask your questions. You'll just be able to also type them in the Q&A box at the bottom, or you can raise your hand by pressing the raise hand icon, and we'll be able to see that. And then we'll ask you to unmute your mic, and you'll be able to verbally ask your question to the panelists today. So with that, on the next few slides, there's just some additional instructions if you're accessing today's session through a few different devices using a 2-in-1 or on your smartphone. If you are logging in through a phone and you'd like to ask a question, you can hit *9 and we'll be able to see that means that your hand has been raised, and then we'll just ask you to unmute and get you to ask a question verbally. So just on to the next slide. So again, thank you everyone for joining us today. Just next slide. Perfect. Again, the participation of everyone here is critical to our engagement process, and we thank you for taking the time out to come learn more about our DER initiative. We do have a number of people on the call today, so we hope that we're able to answer all of your questions. Again, thank you so much for joining us. And with that, I will pass it over to Rob Davidson to kick off the session. So thanks again.
Great. Thanks, Christine. Just want to do a quick check. Christine, can you hear me okay?
Yep, you sound fine.
Wonderful. Great. So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Rob Davidson, and I am the Director of Customer Grid Access at the ISO. My responsibilities in that role are for really the facilitation of system access service to the transmission system. But also in my role is I'm the accountable director at the ISO for the ISO's Distributed Energy Resources Roadmap, or our DER Roadmap. And I report up through to Dennis Freilich, who is our Vice President of Grid Reliability. So on behalf of the organization, I want to welcome you to our session today. And thank everyone for taking time to join us here this morning. I know that everyone is very busy, and we do appreciate your efforts and feedback from today's session. That is very, very important for us. Before I get going with today's session, I'm sure many of you have questions regarding this past Sunday evening's power outage that was in Alberta, where Alberta experienced a frequency disturbance and under-frequency load shedding event on our power system as a result of an unexpected loss of the Alberta BC 500 kV transmission line. We're obviously not here to talk about that today, but I just wanted to touch on that and share with you that our teams are working on the post-event analysis, and an update to that event is going to be provided at an upcoming March 9th stakeholder session, where that session is going to be talking about the ATC risk mitigation and operational preparedness. So if you got questions, please attend that session, or ultimately, we'll direct questions to our stakeholder relations at iso.ca for that. So how on with the day here. So through today's session, I'm going to be joined by several leaders at the ISO, where they're each going to be presenting updates on specific focus areas through our DER roadmap, as well as the market participation recommendation paper. So I just would like to briefly introduce the team members that you're going to hear from today. First of all, I'd like to introduce Karen Yan. Karen is our project manager for the ISO for the DER roadmap, and she's going to be controlling our slides for today's session.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome.
Next, we have Leo Tovar. He is our senior analyst in our forecasting and long-term outlook team.
Good morning, everyone. Pleasure to be here.
Ping Kwan, he is our manager of standards and modeling.
Morning. Welcome.
And then Ralph Liu, he's a senior engineer in our operations planning team.
Morning.
And then we also have Jimmy Zhang, another senior engineer in our operations engineering and market support team.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome.
Darren Goel, and he is a senior market analyst.
Good morning, everyone.
And finally, Rupa Louisant is a manager of our market implementation.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, so that's it from the ISO team. So you're going to hear from the team throughout today's session. We do have a lot of material to go through today. And as we're looking to provide you with an update on the ISO DER roadmap, including the DER market participation recommendations. So just a few key messages before we get going is the ISO, you know, recognizes that the industry is in the middle of a transformation, specifically with the growing volumes of DERs. And I have a slide that I'm going to show you with respect to the updated DER stats, I think just coming down a little bit further. So we have our DER roadmap in place. And so this roadmap is really focusing on enablement of DERs, the integration of DERs, and proactively preparing for the continued growth in DERs as it specifically impacts the ISO's mandate of reliability of the AIES, our markets, so our energy market and our operating reserve markets and the ISO tariff. So the first part of the session, we're going to provide you with an update on the progress of the roadmap with a more of a focus on the activities that we've been working since the last update, which we provided an update in October of 2020. And then we are going to, in the second half of the session, talk about the market participation recommendation paper. So hopefully you've all had a chance to review this paper where we're looking at the integration of small DERs. So these are DERs between 1 and 5 megawatts into our markets. So the energy and operating reserve markets. Our approach in that market participation obviously considers FEOC principles. So the fair, efficient, openly competitive principles. And we're looking at balancing potential benefits of increased competition to costs of implementation, market transparency, operational effectiveness, and the timing of that. So we are looking forward to today's session, and we are seeking your input to obviously enhance our decision-making. I do want to highlight, before we get to the agenda, Karen, can you just back up a slide, I think? Yeah. So before we get into the session, I do want to highlight a couple of things here is that we obviously don't want to talk about project-specific questions. Obviously, project-specific questions are confidential in nature, so we consider that out of scope. As well, any discussion or debate around a regulatory framework that's outside of what our current structure is in Alberta, our roadmap is all built around our current structure and mandates. So that's not what the conversation is about today. And in addition, we clearly don't want to go into processes that are in the regulatory process right now. So this would include things, you know, such as the DCG credits. So they are subject to a current AUC proceeding. So with that, on the stakeholder engagement here, so I do, you know, just want to take a moment to touch on this. We recognize that stakeholder engagement, it's very important to the industry. And you can see our engagement principles on the slide. The ISO recognizes that the decisions we make shape the industry in Alberta and we do value your feedback as part of our decision making. So we continue to seek improvements in how we engage with stakeholders, and we're interested in your feedback, both on the content today, as well as through our engagement process that we have. So at the end of the session, we do have a very short poll that we kindly request your feedback on today's session. So with that, I'm going to move into the content of the day. And I'm just going to take a quick pause. Christine, is everything still good on the video and audio?
Yep, everything's sounding good.
Okay, great. Thank you. So our agenda for today, the first part, about an hour and a half, which we'll talk about the DER roadmap, give you an update on that. We will take questions throughout. We'll try to pause at kind of strategic points as we work through that presentation for specific questions. And then we'll plan a short break around 10:40. We'll obviously be a little bit flexible around that, but that's our plan around 10:40. And then in the last half of the session is where we'll review the DER market participation recommendation paper. And again, we'll take questions throughout the presentation on that. And then we'll look to close at noon today. Next slide, please. Yeah, you can go to the next slide. There you go. Yeah, so first we'll start today with an update on the progress that we've been making on our DER roadmap. So as the ISO progresses our DER roadmap, we are going to continue to provide quarterly progress update sessions. So that will be our plan for this year, as well. This is our Q1 update. We'll do one in Q2, Q3, and Q4. And today we're going to share progress on our activities since October of 2020. And today's session will have a more detailed focus on the priority activities that we've been advancing since October. I will also touch on some other DER activities that we have been advancing that we've just kind of started to engage in. And then I'll wrap it up by talking about what's next. What can we expect and look forward to in the next quarter? And of course, an objective for us today is providing an opportunity for stakeholders to ask questions and provide feedback. And so we value your input. Next slide, please, Karen. So this slide here is the current statistics that the ISO has as of the end of January 2021. You will notice that the total capacity of DERs has broken across to 700 megawatt level. That's a significant increase since the beginning of 2020. So at the end of January, we're at 725 megawatts. At the beginning of 2020, we were at 570 megawatts. So you can see a pretty steep increase over this past year. And just to look at the graph a little more closely, the bottom line, or that red line, is the micro generation. And so for those not familiar with that, that's the small scale, production of electricity that uses renewable or alternative energy sources. So it's less than 5 megawatts. And so as of the end of January, we have about 100 megawatts currently, and you can see a steady increase over the past couple of years within that segmentation. The orange line, that is DERs that are less than 5 megawatts, but they're not considered micro generation. And of course, you can see that trend is relatively flat with a little bit of an uptick over the past year or so. And the green line is where the significant change is. And this green line are DERs that are greater than 5 megawatts. And as of the end of January, that's at 480 megawatts, which when you total all those up, we're at 725. So the DERs greater than 5 megawatts, they make up the majority of the total capacity of DERs and are also the main driver in the step change that we've seen in 2020. Hey, Karen, you can go to the next slide, please. I just want to touch base a little bit on our roadmap, just a real quick overview of that roadmap. Again, our roadmap, it outlines a plan to proactively prepare the ISO for a future state that's characterized by higher penetration of DERs onto the AIS. And we're focusing on how it affects the ISO's mandate of reliability to the AIS, markets, tariff, and then, of course, we have a regulatory component to that. And we recently published our 2021 plan. We posted that on the ISO website. And our plan is, so we've taken our roadmap and then we further provided clarity of more articulation into the what we call integration activities. And so we published what we want to work on in 2021. Some of the feedback that we received back in October and prior to that was if the ISO could look to consider prioritizing each work stream. So that's the enhancement that we've made to this 2021 plan that we posted. We took that feedback and we performed an internal assessment to classify all the different work streams and activities that we're working on and bucketed them into a high priority, medium priority, and low priority. So you'll see that reflected in the plan. And for those not familiar with that plan, it is posted on our website under the DER initiative. So this prioritization was a high level assessment where we looked at the likelihood of issues arising over kind of the short term, you know, within kind of that 3 to 5 year period, and what would be the potential impact if we didn't advance that work. And then we also looked at, well, what's the cost and resources in order for the industry and the ISO to advance working through some of these activities. We want to understand that effort as well. So we took that information, bucketed it all together, and then we put them into the categories of high, medium, and low. So you'll see that in our plan. And just to give you a flavor, some of the ones that floated up to the top were the minimum SCADA trigger level floated up as a high priority. And a large part of this was we thought it was important to provide the industry some clarity with respect to, what was the ISO planning on doing with SCADA? Because obviously that has a real cost to developers. And we wanted to, try to get that out into the industry as soon as possible. Then there's, forecasting is very important to the ISO. And we're going to obviously talk about that today. We want to forecast DERs by technology type. We need to improve our DER modeling. DER modeling is obviously important to all the planning that the ISO does and down even into operations. And then a specific technical requirement, looking at voltage and frequency ride-through requirements as far as how DERs operate through disturbances. And then finally, enhancing the coordinated planning between the transmission and distribution systems. So this is obviously, as DERs become more prevalent, enhanced coordination is really required. So these are the high priority areas that we're looking to focus on this year. Karen, can you go to the next slide, please? So as far as the DER areas that we want to focus on this year, that we're going to talk about in the next slide, are areas that we are, I would say, are nearing completion of our assessments. And finalization of an ISO's approach to managing the specific integration activities. And today we're going to talk about forecasting. So Leo is going to talk about the work that we've been doing on forecasting. Ping Kuang is going to talk about modeling for us. Ralph Liu is going to talk about under-frequency load shedding. And from a SCADA and technical interconnection requirements, Jimmy Zhang is going to talk about that. And then after they're done, I'm going to talk about some of the other activities that we're progressing, such as static data of DERs, activities on coordinated planning between the transmission distribution systems, and the improved coordination operations, what we're looking at doing there. So now, before I turn the floor over to Leo to talk about the forecasting, I'm just going to take a pause here for a second to see if anyone has any questions on anything that I've just touched on. I know that was all very high level at this point, and we're going to get into more specifics, but I just wanted to take a pause, see if anybody had any questions on any of that material that I just talked about.
Rob, we just had one in the Q&A chat box. If you want to, I'll read it out to you. Is distributed generation defined by generation at the point of consumption, or does it include small-scale utility-scale generation, such as 10-megawatt solar farm directly tied to the transmission grid?
Just good question. So distributed generation, so as we've defined it, it'll be generation that is connected to the distribution system. So if it's connected to the transmission system, that would be a transmission connected generator. So yeah, so within our roadmap, we're talking about DERs. So these would be supply sources onto the connected to the distribution system.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. And we just had one more from Adam Genial. I might just get Adam, if you don't mind, to answer live. I'm going to just get you to unmute your mic. Just one second. Adam, you should be unmuted now, if you wouldn't mind asking verbally.
Hi there. I was just wondering whether you just said that the scope was limited to using the existing energy and OR market mechanisms. And I think there's been some discussion about whether EERs can respond faster than OR resources, especially ones that aren't spinning yet. And even within the ramp rate requirements, you can have responses quite a lot faster by DER. So I'm just curious maybe why that's out of scope, especially given that it seemed to have been out of AEC scope in the distribution system inquiry as well.
So I'm just trying to make sure I understand your question here. So are you talking around ancillary services with respect to like a fast frequency response ancillary service?
Something like that. I'll be curious to see whether it's covered in the load shed section.
Oh, okay. So that's not within the scope of the DER roadmap. I know that the ISO is consulting. Well, I don't know, Rupa, do you have the details on our fast frequency response on that engagement component to that?
Yeah, so as part of the energy storage roadmap, we are looking at fast frequency response. So essentially what that is looking at the current load shed service for imports and making it technology neutral. Over and above that, we are also doing an operating reserve review. And so that's one of our market initiatives that we have tasked for this upcoming year as well. So I would get involved in both of those engagements.
Thanks, Rupa.
Okay, great. And that is the last of those questions. So Thank you. So Rob, you can pass it on.
Yeah, so we'll move on to the next slide then. Yeah, so I'm going to turn the floor over to Leo, and Leo is going to talk about forecasting.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Rob. So when it comes to forecasting at the ISO, as you may be well aware, our mandate ranges from planning the grid over multiple years, so we're talking about very long-term time span, to managing day-to-day activities and real-time operations of the grid. So we're talking about very short time spans. And we need to rely and we need to have robust tools to manage both time periods. In all of our tools, especially the ones that cover those two timeframes, we have made significant improvements from the perspective of integrating DERs in the last couple of years. And this is, I'll give you a little bit of a glimpse of what we've done here. But our goals basically over the last 2 years have been on doing three things. On the long-term side of things, we have refined our DER projections, our methodologies, as well as our understanding and leveraging as much as possible data that we have access to. To make sure that our long-term planning tools are calibrated based on the expected DER pace and penetration. And we also use scenarios to cover different pace and impacts. So our long-term planning decisions are made based on those robust scenarios. When it comes to short-term forecasting, we have enhanced our weather forecast inputs, as we know, and as Rob mentioned, a lot of the DER penetration that we have the stronger growth from is coming from the microgeneration segment, and that is largely driven by rooftop solar panels and PV solar panels. And as a result, our ability to forecast cloud coverage, rain precipitation, quality of air, solar radiance has become a lot more critical, and we have invested in that, and we are calibrating our models internally to make sure that our real-time operations take that into account, as well as making sure that we have diversification across all the different planning areas and regions. So we have real-time operations that are adjusting to what's happening in different parts of the province. And while we're doing this, we've also, and this is our third goal, is we have engaged the DFO community to make sure that there's cross sharing of DER forecast knowledge, just like we do with a lot of other forecast tools. So the next slide, please. Now, why is this important? Like I alluded to, when it comes to DER integration in our long-term plan, it will only make our long-term plan decisions all the more robust and defensible and reasonable as well. And when it comes to short-term forecasting tools, although the current DER penetration is not that impactful when it comes to, you know, the large scale of the AIES and how our real-time operations work, we do see some small pockets of concentration of DERs. And in those planning areas and those planning and regions, we are targeting or calibrating our tool to make sure that we have better quality of information in those areas. And we're quite frankly also trying to get ready. As we see a lot more and more and more of DER penetrating the system, we want to be ahead as opposed to working reactively afterwards. When it comes to, you know, why is it important to share information with our DFO's counterparty? It's because, you know, DER in Alberta and DER forecasting in Alberta is still relatively in its nascent stages. And we want to make sure that we start, you know, building that culture of information sharing and understanding with our counterparties. So all of this is reflecting in the scope of work that we have done. As you can see here, our long-term forecast tools have expanded a lot of the different technology types, all the distribution connected generators from solar, wind, and gas, basically the major generation types, and as well as electric vehicles. When it comes to short-term forecasting, as I said, we have focused mostly on solar rooftop, solar panel, and our goal is to continuously evolve this as we go forward, as we see a lot more concentration. And with the DFO engagement, we'll continue those meetings happening on a regular basis. Next slide, please. So in terms of our next steps, you're going to see in the upcoming long-term outlook or LTO that you'll see a lot more details when it comes to DER by different technology types and how we have refined our models and calibrated for different technologies. Those results, especially for the reference case, are already available for our internal purposes, and our engineering groups have already started utilizing them for a lot of other activities, including some of the DER roadmap directions. And when it comes to the short-term forecast, we're working to have an implementation of this going live by the middle of the year. And in terms of the DFO engagement, like I said, that's going to be an ongoing activity. So, you know, we'll be talking to our counterparties on a going forward basis. So I'm going to give you a quick glimpse of our preliminary results from the long-term outlook, the reference case. So you're very lucky you get to see this. And what we're projecting, at least on a preliminary basis of our upcoming 21 LTO, is that DERs are not only here to stay, but they're going to grow. They're going to continue growing. And you saw a little bit of a glimpse of this when Rob presented the slide of the different segmentations. If you remember Rob's slide, he had micro generation and small DER under sub 5 megawatts. Well, those are the ones here in the blue box here. We kind of lumped them together. And large scale DER, and by large scale, we're talking about 5 megawatts and up. Those are the purple portions of the boxes here. As you can see here, we're projecting to grow from somewhere around the 700 megawatt that Rob mentioned to over 2,000 megawatts by the end of our study period of the long-term outlook, which is 20 years. And what we're seeing here as well is that the microgeneration portion of DERs is going to grow at a faster rate and a faster pace than distribution connected generation, such as gas units. So we're going to see, although gas units were growing at a faster pace in 2020, we're going to expect to see, you know, small DERs taking up, you know, picking up the pace there. And in terms of particular technology types, we expect to see a lot more small-scale microgeneration type of solar panels being, not only increasing, not only in the areas that they're concentrated right now, but also spreading in other planning areas of the province. Next slide, please. And for those of you who are familiar with our long-term outlook reports, you may remember that we often play with scenarios. We often like to plan for bookend or extreme cases. And we have gone out to stakeholders last December to ask them, so here's what our reference case scenario looks like. And, we're planning to do a couple of scenarios. Can you help us, figure out what sort of assumptions or what kind of levers we need to push and pull for, especially when it comes to DERs? And we heard overwhelmingly that they wanted to have a more aggressive pace of impact and penetration of DERs. And that's what we're going to be doing with one of the three other scenarios that we're going to be publishing in the LTO. So as you can see here, this slide shows how we have the reference case scenario, which are the results that I just showed you, and how the clean tech scenario is going to push for more aggressive penetration levels. So we're, and the whole narrative that's, weaving all of this, it's the fact that we're having an increase in our carbon pricing schedule. We have, a more carbon conscious industry, as well as consumer preferences, as well as the fact that new technologies that are in that stream of things are coming down in cost. So we're right now in the works of doing, working on all the details of that scenario, and you can expect to see the results in, like I said, in this summer. So if you have any questions about that or about anything that I just discussed regarding the forecasting activities, now is a good time to raise them. Christine, do we have any questions on the box?
Yes, so we've got one from Erica. I don't know if it's about what you were just speaking about, but if we go back to slide 20. Total distributed generation capacity excludes biomass, gas, cogen, hydro, and others. What is included in the DER forecast as shown?
Right, so that's a good question. So this what you're seeing here, what's included, it's a solar, wind, and gas generation. And you may ask yourself, why are you just asking, why are you including those three types and not the biomass and the, small scale hydro and whatnot? The reason is we're focusing on the technology types that are basically growing the most at the moment and that are not purely driven by niche government programs or subsidies or are trying to serve other type of goals such as irrigation or wood waste product programs and generation of power is just a secondary business activity. So we just focus on, again, solar, wind, and gas.
Okay, great. And we're just going to go on to the next one. How do you see federal funding initiatives such as the ICIP and others drive the adoption versus simple economics, especially over the next 5 years?
That's a good question. And so that's something that our team has been focusing a lot on understanding the subsidies of this. We have gone for the different DER technology types. We have done economic models. So a lot of them are from the bottom up where we look at not only what is the capital cost of installing any of these technologies, but also looking at what are the potential revenue streams or potential subsidies or grants that different consumers of different levels could tap into making their decision. At the same time, we have looked at different adoption rates. So I gotta be honest with you, sometimes our most calibrated economic models tend to be on the conservative side. So we tend to play with assumptions regarding adoption rates, whereby discount factors can be, played with. So hopefully that answers your question. If you have more details on that, or if you want to get more details, feel free to send an email to our forecast@iso.ca account.
Okay, great. And we just have a few more questions. The next one is from Justin. Can you tell us the expected growth of energy storage DER assets in LTO scenarios?
Right. So when it comes to energy storage at a small scale, and I assume that's what you mean by DER assets, it's we're not seeing any pickup on that yet. We looked really hard. We talked to different counterparties, including DFOs, and we haven't seen a convincible amount of energy storage at small scale that will warrant us to include it in the LTO. Now we're up for more suggestions and more data on this, but for this LTO, we're gonna only include energy storage assets at the transmission level.
Okay, great. And just a few more questions here. One from Erica. How was feedback on the LTO scenarios provided under their consultation included in this figure? It appears to be the same as presented with the LTO scenarios. Are these scenarios set in stone?
Erica, good eye. So we presented a similar version of this slide in our stakeholder presentation. And essentially, it aligned with what we had in mind, which is a more aggressive penetration. What we have done is, when it comes to the actual details, we have gone a step or two further. So the scenarios are currently not set in stone, but they're pretty much locked in the terms of what the narrative is going to be. If you have more feedback to provide, feel free to reach out to us. But what we have here aligns very well with what we hear back from the stakeholders. So I don't think your stakeholders will be disappointed when they see the clean tech scenario results.
Okay, great. Thanks, Leo. Just a couple more questions. One from Anton here. Do you plan to share white papers methodology used for either long or short-term forecasting sometime in the future?
That's a very good question. It's something that we probably haven't put a lot of thought internally, part of another initiative that we're going to be doing at the ISO is that we're going to be doing potentially reports that are focused on technologies, and white papers on methodologies could be something that we can consider as part of that initiative.
Okay, great, thanks. And this next question, I think we're going to pass over to Rob. Another question from Erwin. How does the NREL 15% rule tie into hosting capacity? Is this rule of thumb valid, and do you see areas where DER penetration exceeds 15% of distribution peak, driving more intensive evaluation of hosting and duck curve issues?
That's a really good question, Erwin. From a hosting capacity perspective, So I know that the DFOs have made significant strides over the past year or two on providing hosting capability information to developers on how much they can host. One of the things that we'll talk about later on is from an ISO perspective, from a transmission perspective, there is. We do assessments on how much generation that we can integrate into the transmission system. And so there's needs to be a coordinated effort between the information that the distribution companies are providing and the hosting capability at a substation. And what does that reflect back up into the transmission system to ensure that we're providing a complete set of information to the developers from that perspective. So that is an area for improvement that we flagged that we're going to work on this year. I think your second part of this question is a little bit of a forecasting component. If I look at this, so I don't know, Leo, if you can add commentary on this, but I wanted to understand if we see areas at which penetration will exceed 15% of distribution peaks. I suspect, Leo, we haven't got into that level of analysis. Would that be fair?
I have done some preliminary analysis on concentration, and we're not even close to the 5 or even 2% in some substations at the very least. So at this point, we haven't seen that level of concentration yet.
Thanks, Leo.
Okay, great. And Erwin, I see that you just have one follow-up question, so I'm just going to get you to unmute your mic. I'll just pass it over to you, and you can chat with Rob or Leo. So you should be able to speak now.
Well, hi. This is the question that I had on just the ratio of capacity for distributed generation to utility scale. And other jurisdictions, when I look at sort of utility and non-utility scale in terms of new generation added, it's almost 50-50, but I'm just interested in the balance of renewable of utility to non-utility scale, and then within that non-utility scale, sort of renewable to non-renewable.
Erwin, this is a good question. Certainly I've seen the data, but I haven't done that ratio comparison that you're asking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm from Saskatchewan here, and the Distributed Energy Association managing director. So I'd love to see what's happening next door in Alberta. So maybe you and I can connect and have some more discussions. I would appreciate that.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much for joining us, Erwin, and thanks for your question. So I'm gonna pass it back to Leo and we'll get back to our slides. Thanks very much everyone for that question break.
All right. So I think we have one last question. Is that right, Christine?
Yeah, we do, Leo.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So the last question, this is about the Clean Fuel Standard and the impact on the development of DCG. Hi, Dan. How's it going? Yes. So we are looking at CFS and the impact on DER penetrations. However, that's not included in the reference case scenario results that you saw here. And we're still debating internally how to integrate it in, or whether we will integrate it into our clean tech scenario, just because some of the details are not very clear yet.
Okay, great. So that answers all of the questions that we have right now. Back over to you, Leo.
So I think the next slide, Leo, right, is if we're going on, can you hit the
right. Next? Yeah, so the next slide, I'll pass it on to my colleague, Pim Kwan, who's going to be talking about CPS modeling.
Hi, thank you, Leo. Hi, my name is Pim. So today I'm going to be talking about the DER modeling, and here we talk about electrical modeling, so slightly different than the economic modeling that Leo has referred to earlier. As a background, the ISO, we have a central power system modeling, which we are using for both near in real-time operation. So hour ahead, day ahead operation, all the way to long-term system planning, 2, 5, 10, 20 years out. So the goal of this initiative is to include all offering generating assets, so those over 5 megawatts, for both real-time and long-term studies. And in order to help market participants, we are providing a simplified methodology for the market participants to provide modeling data to the ISO. Next, please. So why is it important? In order for the ISO and also for other study engineers to understand the forecast and the impact, we need to have a model predicting what the DER are going to behave on the grid. For example, if I see something fast coming at me, I better know, right, is my dog coming at me or is it a train coming at me? So in my Mando model, it's a train. I'm going to change track. My situational awareness tell me to move away. So it's no different here that what we're doing modeling are the size, the location and how it's connected, and also the frequency response, voltage response, what are the rifle capabilities in order to evaluate the impact of the DER and how the grid operate together with this DER in it. So the scope of work is in threefold. First of all, we are documenting the rationale and the DER model requirement. That's going to be a guideline. And this one are focused on those that are 5 megawatts and above. As mentioned previously, we're providing a simplified approach with a library of typical models. And this is the same approach and the same models that are being in use by NERC, which is the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, where the models are, where typical models with typical values are provided as per the generation type. So one set of typical models for solar, one set of typical model for wind, a couple of different typical models for the synchronous machines, rather small hydro, reciprocating gas engines, or CHP, combined heat and power. The second aspect of the scope of work is to build, it's for the ISO to build aggregated models for those that are less than 5 megawatts. So the ISO will aggregate the DER resources that are less than 5 megawatts and integrate it into a model when necessary. So we're not asking the small participant to provide detailed model to us. Rather, we're going to use the data that we have in order to create a model. And lastly, it's on the inclusion of the feeder into transmission system model. The purpose of the transmission system model is to evaluate impact to the transmission system. Now, we don't expect in many cases the feeder will have substantive impact to the transmission system. However, we're creating a criteria in order to identify those small those relatively rare instances where that could happen, and therefore those feeders should be included in the transmission system model. Next, please. Okay. So in terms of status update, the ISO, it's adding a component on DERs to the existing facility modeling information document, which as stated earlier, we will be including the generic modeling information onto the information document. And this is really to help the market participants to provide modeling information to the ISO. And this will be posted in 2021. Additionally, for those DERs that go through the ISO connection process, the project data update package or PDUP, that process has also been updated, and right now that's already posted on our website. And also internally to the ISO, we have completed a internal guideline on when to include the feeder in the transmission model. So right now, should I pass on to the questions, Christine?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. So we've got one question again from Erwin. Do you work in collaboration with universities? Are you digital twin efforts and look ahead scenario planning? Just curious if your modeling platforms are shared to enlist additional support, especially in periods of transition.
So in terms of the modeling, in terms of the modeling community, yes, we have been consulting with a number of stakeholders, which also include representative from one of the universities in Alberta, where we have gone out, consult, and taken feedback on what is the appropriate level of detail that should be modeled in order to capture the impact onto the transmission system. The emphasis is really on capturing what are the impact on the system wide, and also on the impact onto the transmission system, and that goes really we are being really cognizant on including the different level of details, and this is done in collaboration with the as part of the transmission data committee, which also include university representation.
Perfect.
Do we have any other questions?
I think that's everything. No, I think that's good for now. So just pass it back to you.
Okay. I believe that's the last slide that I have. With this, I'll pass it on to Ralph.
Thank you, Ping. So this topic is about the DR impact on our frequency load shedding program. We only have two slides on this topic. The reason is we think this topic has limited impact to the stakeholder at this point. A little bit of background. So the Alberta UFLS program is documented in the OPP 804 published on the ISO website. One of the main goals of the program is to minimize the risk of total system collapse for the under-frequency events. So how does the DR impact our program then? When the DR output changes, it could affect the net load on the connected feeder that a system sees. So that's why ISO needs to have a better understand on how the DR impact the UFLS load availability, and also how it impact the overall under frequency load shedding program effectiveness. There are two pieces of work on this topic. So the first one, we have assessed the DR impact on the UFLS program with one DFO. So we ask the DFO for the historical hourly load data for each UFLS feeder, and also for the total DFO load for each hour. Then we compare, we calculate the percentage and compare that percentage with the OPP 804 requirements. The second piece was we took a look at the WEC practice and Alberta practice on the annual UFLS review process. And then we want to see if there's a need to further enhance our annual review process. So we have completed both of these two pieces. Next slide, please. Four main conclusions. First of all, every year when we do the UFLS review with DFOs, we remind the DFOs that our under frequency load shedding program require a net demand reduction. And so we want to avoid selecting feeders with large DRs on it for UFLS purpose. Also, we don't see a need to change our annual review process for UFLS at this point, but in future, every 3 years or so, we want to perform an assessment similar with what we have done, you know, using the historical load data, and to see the future DR impact. And the other thing is we plan to stay connected to WEC UFLS workgroup to see what their findings are on the DR impact and what are the mitigations, and also if any of these are applicable in Alberta. So that's the, you know, these two slides. Any questions?
Looks like you answered all the questions already, Ralph.
All right. That's the case, and thank you. I'll pass it on to Jimmy.
Hey, thank you, Ross, and good morning, everyone. So I hope everyone can hear me well, because my swallow told me there's a little bit of echo when I introduced myself at the very beginning. So, and today I have an internet issue, so I have to call in and not able to share my camera this time. I'm sorry for that. And but I'm happy to provide updates regarding the DER SCADA data and also the DER technical interconnection requirements. So without further ado, let's start with the SCADA. So SCADA stands for Supervisor Control and Data Acquisition. And SCADA data provides the real-time visibility to system controllers and ENS systems to allow a reliable grid operation in the real time. So visibility basically refers to actively monitor the key real-time information that may include, for example, the generator status, how much electricity they generate or stored, and maybe their technical capability and so on. So with increasing DER penetration, so DER visibility become more important and necessary for both DIFOs and ASO in order to dynamically manage the grid or the network and also maintain a reliable grid operation. Presently in Alberta, for DER greater than or equal to 5 megawatts, they are governed by the ISO SCADA rule 502.8. For SCADA less than 5 megawatts, the ISO rule doesn't apply, but local DIFOs have technical interconnection requirements that require a DER to provide the visibility at different levels. However, this data, not available for ASO at present time. So our goal here is to assess the need to lower DER SCADA triggering level to further expand DER visibility from reliable operations standpoint of view. But if DER participating in the market, they should comply with the SCADA requirements in the market rule. And important thing, as I explained previously, with increasing DER integrated to distribution network, actually one of the fundamental requirements of operating this or such an increasingly complex the power grid is to enhance the visibility. The enhanced visibility will not only provide the grid security, but also provides additional information for understanding, for better understanding of how DER behaviors and which in turn will benefit DER modeling and the real-time forecasting process. Let's go to the next page, please. Scope of work are listed here to assess the needs to lower SCADA triggering level and also to implement the recommendation from this assessment. So regarding the assessment, ASA has been working closely with DFOs and the PFOs on the DER-related topics. July 2019, ASA established the Technical Performance Exploration Group, also called the TPAC team, so which consists of a technical experts from utilities across Alberta, including DFOs, TFOs, and ASOs to exchange ideas and discuss DER-related topics and more importantly, proactively prepare for the future state of high DER penetration. So these assessments listed here are more focused on the SCADA part, and mainly they kind of contributed from two aspects. One, we focus on the importance for reliable grid operation and their subsequent benefits for modeling and the real-time forecasting, which has been addressed in the previous slides. And the second part is without compromising the reliable operation, and the guiding principle for this assessment is that the cost enhanced by DER visibility does not overrate the benefits. So with those arguments, our assessment is concluded with the results list here. ASO will maintain the 5 MW minimum SCADA data triggering for resource, which is also aligned with the market participation level. And VER follows SCADA requirements set by their connecting DFOs if more stringent local requirements apply. Also, we want to leverage the existing SCADA data from DFOs for VER less than 5 MW that include all VERs less than 5 MW if they are required to establish the communication with their connecting DFOs based on DFOs interconnection requirements. So there's no additional cost for VER owners from ASO part. In addition, ASO will establish the communication with the DFOs for data sharing. And that can be implemented by leveraging the existing communication network between ASO and the DFOs that will further reduce the cost. Next page, please. So the status updates and next step. So the assessment has been successfully completed. In 2021, ASO will continue to work with each DFOs on establishing the connectivity and transferring the real-time SCADA data for those VER less than 5 MW. And that's the update summary regarding the VER SCADA data. Is there any questions before we move to the next topic?
Thanks, Jimmy. Yes, we just do have one question from Chris. In terms of DER visibility, would the ISO consider accepting estimated DER production instead of SCADA if a DFO had a DERMS system in place?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. And So there's a two different approach. One is to get the DER real-time measurements, and if we have those information. So that's why we are discuss with the DFO and to understand what is the existing available DER information that can be shared with us. And that you are right, for estimating the DER operation, that's also another approach that we are looking for. And also, I think that fit into the real-time forecasting. And I think Leo also working on that, working direction as well. And so the simple answer is yes, we are also looking for the estimated DER to contribute for the real-time operation.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Okay.
Looks like those are all the open questions we have right now. So back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Chris. Let's move to the next page, please. Yeah, so next topic is about the DER technical interconnection requirements. Some background. So when we start talking about this technical requirement, the people may think like a DER is much smaller than a conventional generator, so their impact on the system shall be much less. I want to say yes, that may be true if only considered individual DER. However, the aggregating effect from DERs in the entire system for a large area can bring the same challenge to the power grid as the big generator does. So transmission connected generator are required to operate in compliance with the well established ISO rules. But there's no technical requirement regarding the system reliability set for DER at present time. DFOs may have their local interconnection requirements, but it's mainly focused on the requirement from distribution level, not from the AIES system level. So without a proper technical requirement in place, there's a big concern on the potential negative impact on the system reliability from the years. So our goal is, So recently, both IEEE and the CSA have each published the standards for interconnection of VER. The standards are voluntary in nature, and the DFOs in Alberta has raised questions on how the requirements in the standard can be selected appropriately and adopt consistently into the interconnection requirements for DERs in Alberta. So our goal is to define the criteria and apply it to adopt the appropriate industry standard and establish a mutually agreed working process. Why it is important? The important thing for this work, actually this working direction, is to ensure continued reliable operation and the system planning of AIES with increasing VER penetration level. Let's go. Yeah. Okay. There are actually multiple topics under technical interconnection requirements. As I said, ASO have been working with TPAC members on those topics. And currently, we're focusing on those following topics listed here. They are frequency and voltage rise through transmission protection coordination, which also including the topic of effective grounding, islanding, and anti-islanding detection. Next page, please. Up to now, ASO and TPAC have completed the exploration on the following tasks or topics. ASO is going to publish a series of DER integration paper in the time frame of Q1, Q2 this year. So this document articulates the rationale for a recommendation, proposed guidelines, and also a suggested working process. Some of the documents are also intended to assist interested party in assessing the potential impact that ASO's recommendation may have on them, like including current or planned future projects or facilities and services. And also, as I said, ASO will continue working with DFOs and TFOs to implement the recommendation according to the integration papers as appropriate. That's all the presentation summary for technical interconnection requirements. Now, I think I'm open for any questions.
Great, thanks so much, Jimmy. It looks like we've just got one question here from Erwin. Is resiliency considered and any economic value attributed?
Yes. Thank you, Erwin, for the question. Definitely, when we plan our criteria for the selection of the performance, like a DR performance, we definitely considered economic impact. So not only, so as I said, the reliability is a premium. So that is the foundation. But without compromising any reliability, we also considering the economic, the cost for may adding to the DR owner. Definitely, we consider those information when we make the decision. Okay.
And thanks for your feedback, Adam. We'll take that back as well. And again, thanks everybody for your questions. This has been a great discussion and keep these questions coming. And it looks like that's all we've got for you right now, Jimmy. So we'll pass it back to you. And then I believe it's back over to Rob. So thanks again, everybody.
Thank you. Yep, thank you.
Great, thanks, Jimmy. So So yeah, now I just want to provide an update on some of the other activities that that the ISO has been progressing through. So Karen, if you can go to the next slide. So just at a high level, here we go. Okay. So some of the other activities that we're working towards is, you know, DER static data. So this is not SCADA data, this is static data. So this is, you know, obviously the attributes of a DER. At this point, the ISO, we've been working with the DFOs to standardize on static data submissions for DERs. We get, and this is for DERs really less than 5 megawatts. We get all the static data we need from DERs that are 5 megawatts and greater. So what we're working with is now with the DFOs is to standardize that submission and then centrally store that in an ISO database. And so what we're doing is we're developing a data portal with the DFOs to electronically transfer this information. Right now, we do get the information, but it's received in hard copies. There are PDF documents that they're received, and there's lots of, you know, manual entry, behind the scenes on that. So we're looking to provide some efficiencies in the way we receive this data to obviously increase efficiency, reliability, and accuracy of the data. So we've been working with, the ISO has internally been working with development of this data portal, and that has been engaging with the DFOs most recently on that. And we are looking to do some user testing on the technical functionality of the data portal. And we're doing that user testing, I believe, shortly in the first half of this year. Now, coordinated planning is another piece that is important to us, is particularly as, you know, the increase in DERs, that planning between the distribution system and transmission system becomes even more important. A couple of the items that we're focusing in on is, I mentioned it earlier, is that the DFOs, many of them have their hosting capability maps that indicate, you know, what's the ability to connect DERs into a substation. And the ISO, we also do assessments of how much generation can you integrate into the transmission system. And so it's important that the information that we provide to developers provides that holistic view. And so we'll be engaging with the DFOs on how we can coordinate that information together. Another important effort is to coordinate alignment of what I would say would be like DFO capital plans, TFO capital plans, their capital maintenance plans, and the ISO's plans, really to ensure that we're overall coordinated with what we're looking to, you know, propose, recognizing that we want to make sure that our plans are efficient and give consideration to all three of those aspects. So we're going to initiate some discussions this year with the DFOs and TFOs on that and hope to develop a process for further coordination there. And then, you know, I think some of the other items that we have will be around the DFOs each have their own connection process, if you will, that they connect DERs to. The ISO, we have our connection process for into the transmission system. And it's pretty evident that some tighter coordination is needed between those two processes to ensure that the end-to-end process is efficient and as cost-effective as possible. So I can see that as another area that we're going to look to tackle this year on the coordinated planning side. And then from a coordinated operation side, we're going to continue to explore into 2021 how we can incorporate DERs into our net demand forecasting process. So we're looking to enhance our net demand forecasting by incorporating wind and solar variability for large DERs, and then also look to incorporate, you know, the SCADA data that we get from the smaller DERs into that. We're looking at seeing what changes need to be made to real-time operator processes and tools in consideration of this new, you know, the new information that we're receiving, whether it's the SCADA data forecasting or modeling information. Leo touched on that a little bit earlier. And then this last one here. So this is one at which when we started our DER roadmap that we didn't see as an issue, but it's came out over the past year, and this is associated with Rule 306.4, and that's the Transmission Planning and Outage Coordination Rule, Reporting and Coordination Rule. There's in that rule, there's specific outage coordination requirements for the TFOs and the ISO that when coordinating significant outages if that affect generating units, that there's a minimum of no less than 30 days notification that's required. And so, of course, with the increased volume of DERs connecting to the distribution system, it's really making this process more complex for the ISO and the TFOs to manage. So we're exploring how we're going to provide some efficiencies, in the outage coordination component to this, and including assessing whether or not there should be a minimum, call it a minimum trigger level for what is considered a significant outage. Right now, I believe the rule just states generation, to the interconnected electric system. So that's really any interconnected generation, regardless of size. And so obviously, so we're looking at, maybe there's a minimum threshold that that is established for that. But anyway, so that's another one that we're going to look to progress this year as well. Next slide, Karen, please. Yeah, so what's next? The first part here is the ISO website. So we are going to be doing a little bit of reorganization to our DER initiative website. Some of the feedback that we received is it's a little bit difficult to find some of the information, particularly as we start to release information or papers on the different topics, whether it's like I mentioned here, these what we're calling our ISO DER roadmap integration papers, talking about the static data, frequency voltage ride through, transmission protection coordination, effective grounding, the anti-islanding. So as we look to release those documents to the industry, we want to provide it in a way in which it makes sense on the website. So we are going to be doing a little bit of a redesign there. And we are going to be then looking to publish, those integration papers. So look for those. So those ones are there, planned to come out this year. And then we are also looking at, obviously, we'll update our 2021 plan. So every quarter, as we get into the next update session, we're going to continue to reevaluate our plan, test where we're at today, do any changes need to be made, and then modify as we think we need to, and based upon any feedback that we obviously receive. So, with that, I think it comes to the end for the roadmap update session. So I'm going to, I think from a time perspective, we've got a few moments left. I can turn the floor open to any feedback or questions people may have. I see there's one question there. Is the ISO working on aligning interconnection process also involving aligning QFDFO practices? Yeah, so I see that as in the scope of the coordinated planning. So I think our ultimate goal is, I think we should be looking at an end-to-end process for maximum efficiency from that perspective. So we'll look to be kicking that discussion off this year as well sometime.
Okay, great. Yeah, it looks like that is all the questions that we've got right now. I don't see any hands raised or anything. So okay. We are a little bit ahead of schedule.
Yes, maybe Christine, it's probably still a good time to break, don't you think?
Yeah, I think we'll take a short little 5-minute break. It's 10:20 now, so we'll restart at 10:25. And again, thank you everybody so much for the discussion. The questions have been great. And we'll see you guys all back here at 10:25 for the next half of the session. Thanks again, everybody.
Okay, thanks, Christine.
We are going to get started for the next section here, and I'm going to pass it on to Roopa Louison, who is going to take it from here. Over to you, Roopa.
Thanks, Christine. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Roopa Louison, Manager of Market Implementation in the Market and Tariff Team. Myself and Darren Gogol,
who is also on the market implementation team, will be going through the draft recommendations for DER market participation. As we indicated in our previous sessions, the review of the current market participation thresholds and options for further aggregation of DERs is part of the markets pillar of the DER roadmap. The review considers market participation changes in the energy and operating reserve market. A key consideration in the review is that changes must balance the potential benefits of increased competition against the considerations for implementation and additional regulatory or compliance requirements for the ISO and market participants. Next slide. It should be noted that for the purposes of this review, all DERs between 1 to 5 megawatts are referred to as small DERs. Next slide. The objective of this portion of the session is to present the ISO's draft recommendations for small DER market participation. The draft recommendations consider the value and benefit of the change for the ISO market participants, implementation considerations, market transparency, operational effectiveness, and timing of need. So things like, is it important to implement now? Can changes be deferred or revisited in the future if there isn't a need to change anything at this time? For this session, we are making an assumption that stakeholders have read the DER market participation draft recommendation paper, which was published on February 17th. And this session is an opportunity for stakeholders to ask clarifying questions in advance of submitting the written responses. Next slide. So the principles guiding this review, and we'll go through some of the issues and options and rationale as in the next part of the session. But the principles guiding this review are market efficiency and cost. So things like increased competition enhances market efficiency. The more assets that participate, the more competition. Currently, assets below 5 megawatts are not permitted to submit an offer. If the must-offer requirement is lowered, it may not materially affect competition if price is not the sole factor in output decisions, or if offer submissions are not expected to impact price because they are expected to be at $0. And we'll go through some of that data in the next part of the session as well. Cost, the cost of participant rule compliance and ISO implementation must be weighed against the market benefit. Additional costs could present an additional barrier to participation. Now I'll hand off to Darren Gogol, who will walk through the issues, the draft recommendation, and the rationale behind the proposed recommendations. Darren?
Thanks, Rupa. So I'm going to go through the 6 draft recommendations, and then in the remaining slides, we'll go through the rationale of those recommendations. I plan on stopping for questions after each rationale is explained for each recommendation, and we'll also stop for questions at the end of the presentation. So there's plenty of time for questions. So quickly just going through our recommendations, our first one is we plan to maintain the requirement for energy submissions for source assets, 5 megawatts and greater. So we are not going to be lowering that. Number 2, we're going to allow voluntary participation in the energy market for small DERs, 1 megawatt and greater. Number 3, we're going to lower operating reserve asset qualification thresholds to provide operating reserves for reg, spin and SUP, from the current requirement of 15, 10, and 5, respectively, down to 1 megawatt. Number 4, we're going to allow small DER, 1 to 5 megawatt, participation in the OR market without a requirement to submit offers in the energy market. Number 5, we recommend to discontinue exploration of aggregation options for small DERs in the energy market. And number 6, discontinue exploration of aggregation options for small DERs in the OR market. Next slide, please. I think someone's mic might be on. So just a quick review of how our two participation models in the energy market. So we have direct participation. So as we've talked about before, so source assets with a maximum capability of 5 megawatts and greater are required to submit offer submissions in the energy market. And this is how they compete for dispatch and thus given permission to inject energy onto the AIES. Indirect participation, source assets less than 5 megawatts, are currently prohibited from submitting offers. And as a result, participation is limited to registration and settlement. Next slide. So what's the issue? As increased small DER penetration on the AES has the potential to impact both reliability and the FEOC, which is fair, efficient, open competition operation of the market. Next slide, please. So when we were looking at assessing whether small DER should submit offers in the energy market, what were we looking at? We're looking at the current installed capacity, the operational characteristics, and the future installed capacity. So what we're trying to get a handle on is what's out there right now? What are the resource characteristics of these assets? So what's the fuel source, the controllability, the potential dispatchability, price responsiveness to the energy market? How closely are they currently following the energy market price signal? And then, of course, long-term forecasts. Just because the grid is today doesn't mean it's going to be that way tomorrow. So we really want to look at growth rates, both historic and forecast, by asset size and fuel type. Next slide, please. So when we were looking at our current inventory, we basically split it out into two distinct areas. One is the renewable variable generation, and the other is the more traditional gas generation. Here we're looking at the small renewable variable DERs on the grid. Currently, roughly more than 50% of the installed capacity is solar and wind. As you can see, these graphs are from our LTO forecast. So this is kind of a sneak peek to these numbers. By 2040, the AESO forecasts solar and wind to account for more than 80% of all small DERs. So right now, if you look on the far left pie chart, the existing, we're roughly 50-50. I mean, maybe a little more renewable, but not too, but we're pretty close. By 2030, we start getting a lot more solar. And by 2040, we're looking at predominantly solar. Predominantly, we're predicting, as Leo said earlier, rooftop solar. So we're talking small microgen. Next slide, please. So if we were considering asking this group of assets to submit offers, what would that look like? Well, they're non-controllable. So they're dispatchable downwards, but not dispatchable upwards. If they were required to submit offers, the zero cost fuel, sunshine and wind, likely results in a $0 submission. And I recognize that's an assumption, but I think it's a pretty decent assumption. So therefore, there's minimal price impact on supply demand equilibrium with or without the energy market submission. And that's, of course, assuming a $0 offer submission. So it's just if you're looking at the graphic below, whether we treat them as unoffered generation on the right-hand side, or if we treat them in the part of the supply, the result's the same. The price impact's the same, whether they're treated as supply or demand. Next slide, please. So here we're looking at the more traditional thermal. Currently, small gas generation accounts for less than half of small DERs, representing about 40% of the small DERs. If you're just looking at the chart below, we're looking at the purple section, and particularly in the middle there. So I did include greater than 5 megawatts there, just for you to see that most traditional gas generation on the DERs is actually larger than 5. In that very middle column, we're looking at the purple section. We're looking at roughly 85 megs or so. So that's the size of the issue. Next slide, please. So if we were to require this group of assets to submit offers, first of all, we're looking at controllability. These assets are dispatchable up and down. However, there seems to be low correlation to the energy market price signal. Now, we went over this graph in the October session, but we'll go over it one more time. Each blue dot represents an hourly settled pool price over the last 5 years. And that is the total generation of this asset group, of the gas-fired distributed generation for that particular hour. Now, again, I'll caution you, your eyes can get fooled a little on this scatterplot graph. When you look at the far left, when you see that giant blue blob there, you see that's not that there's more generation there. That's just there's more hourly settled pool prices there. So when we're looking at this graph, we can see there's very little. The R squared is 0.07. So there's very little correlation between output, total output, combined output, and price. Arguably, you could say maybe between $0 and $30, $40, there's a small bit of correlation, but anything past $100, and it's really a coin toss between whether they're going to show up that day or not. So it looks like the energy price signal is not really the primary price signal. Other factors that may influence the output decisions include environmental regulation, compliance, flare gas perhaps, environmental economics, credits or penalties, cogeneration efficiencies, is this just being used for heat, reliable backup power, voltage, wires cost avoidance, potential DFO tariff incentives, such as coincident peak calculations. So we got a lot going on here. Next slide, please. I think we went, there we go. So recommendation again is to maintain the current offer submission requirement. The rationale, the current installed capacity is more than 50% renewable, mostly solar, with assumed offer, $0 offer price taker. Minimal effect on supply-demand equilibrium, whether these assets are offered into the energy market order or treated as negative load or negative demand. By 2040, we're forecasting most of the small DERs are going to be renewable variable generation, mostly solar, mostly rooftop solar. Small DER dispatchable gas generation has low correlation to energy market price signal. So that's non-price responsive, indicating other factors in commercial operation decisions. The installed capacity and behavior of small DERs is not expected to significantly alter competitive outcomes in the energy market. Efficiency benefits from direct participation are not expected to outweigh the cost of participant rule compliance and the ASO implementation for these assets. And of course, this is subject to the ISO achieving visibility through other means and setting out required technical standards. The ISO doesn't see a reliability need for which to lower the participation threshold at this time. So I will stop here for some questions.
Thanks, Darren. We've got a few questions coming in. The first one that I'm going to get you to tackle is from William. You may have answered this already, but just for clarification, what is the classification for DERs that are under 1 megawatt and export power into the wholesale market?
So most of all except maybe a few really small gas units, and there's not many of them, they fall under the microgen category. So you have the small microgen, which is 150 kilowatts and lower, and then large microgen, which is 150 kilowatts to 5 megawatts. Does that answer the question?
I think so. And then we've got two questions here somewhat related that we're going to pass over to Leo from William and Irwin. Have you considered any geothermal DER penetration into the market? And has a decarbonization pathway for CHP been considered via hydrogen or biofuel? So Leo, I believe you mentioned that you wanted to tackle these.
Yeah. Again, definitely. So in our current LTO forecast, we have not included any of these technology types that were listed here, whether they are geothermal DERs or combined heat power plants via hydrogen or biofuel. We have only focused on solar, wind,
and gas generation. And largely it's because of those are the major technology types that we see penetrating in our province and where the economics and policy drivers are telling us they will grow significantly in the next little while.
Okay, great. Thanks, Leo. And Nicholas, we might just get you to unmute your mic and ask your question live. I've just got you to unmute.
Hi. Yeah, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with any of this. I think all the proposals are pretty reasonable. I guess I'm just a bit curious about the assumption that the predominantly microgen would be expected to always put in a zero offer when, you know, the alternative, it seems to me, would be like net metering, right? So wouldn't they be missing out on being compensated at the retail rate for any export?
Okay, let's break that down a little. So the microgens, we're currently not recommending that they submit offers. Now, in a hypothetical situation, were we to require the submission of offers and only allow dispatch, consequently, for those, if they were going to get paid the retail rate they would have to generate, and likely, given their zero-cost fuel, they would want to be dispatched. So I think the offer price would likely be zero. But again, we're not considering microgen, especially the small microgen at this point.
I thought you were considering large microgen.
Potentially. But as we look through the rationale, we're not seriously considering that at this point, as we don't.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Next question.
I was on mute. My apologies. Happens to the best of us. So the next question we have is from Brian and Darren, is going to you. Does recommendation number 3 apply to applicable projects connected to either DFO and TFOs, or only DFOs connected DERs? So,
can we defer that question to after we've talked about recommendation 3?
For sure.
Thanks.
So Brian, we'll get back to you on that one. Okay, great. So
am I muted?
Oh, Nicholas, you're still muted, but I can take you off.
No, I want to remain muted.
Okay. There you go. So Darren, another question from Matthew Davis, is there a level of DER penetration where the ISO may be concerned about the aggregate impact of the lower visibility with no must offer obligation for units smaller than 5 megawatts?
Hey Matthew, great question. When we're talking, we don't currently have a line in the sand with regards to this, but certainly there at some point, we would take a look at that. When we're taking a look at net demand variability, however, we're going to look at it holistically. So when we get to a point at the ISO where net demand variability does become a concern, we'll have to look at exactly which assets are contributing to it and what our options are. So yes, we are concerned about the aggregate impact, but at this point, we're not overly concerned about it.
Okay, great. Thanks. And another question just from Erwin here. Any planned and purposeful deployment strategy for DERs where grid benefit is optimized, for example, at grid fringe tied to capital cost avoidance? What all goes into consideration of hosting benefits? I don't know if you want to tackle this or over to Rob.
Yeah, I think I'll let potentially Rob tackle this one.
Yeah, that's a good question, Erwin. So I think obviously this is one area, obviously not, I don't see this as part of Darren's market component that he's discussing now for the market thresholds, but and participation, but from a grid, it looks like you're looking about a grid reliability service, if I'm interpreting your question properly, kind of cost avoidance tied to capital. And so I think this is obviously is in the, if you had a chance to read the AUC DSI inquiry report that just came out, obviously this is an area at which the industry has, you know, I think flagged as, you know, as a need of further discussions on how to move forward with that. So at this point, you know, I think that's, there's more to be discussed, I think, in the regulatory environment with respect to that.
Thanks so much, Rob. And I think with that, most of the other questions you'll be able to tackle at a later part of your presentation. So Darren, I think we'll pass it back to you if you want to carry on. Thanks so much.
Great. Next slide, please. Okay, voluntary participation for small DER in the energy market. So as we discussed earlier, right now, those assets with a maximum capability of less than 5 are prohibited from submitting offers in the energy market. As a result, the participation of these assets is limited to registration and settlement. So what's the issue? Well, prohibiting source assets from competing in the energy market through the submission of offers may be a barrier to small DER participation in the energy market. Recommendation. We're going to allow voluntary participation in the energy market for small DERs, 1 megawatt and greater. The rationale, the current rule is a barrier to participation for small DERs in the energy market. Offer submissions from small DERs in the energy market is unlikely to impact system reliability or market operations, so we can handle this. Inclusion of small DERs is consistent with the FEOC operation of the markets, particularly the open competition, and the recommended change can be implemented without costly IT system upgrades. Currently, our IT systems do not dispatch infractions, and as such, lowering the threshold below 1 megawatt would require potentially costly IT system upgrades. So that's why we're holding the line at 1 megawatt and greater. Questions?
I don't think we have any new questions that have popped up, so you can keep going.
Okay. Small DER participation in the OR market. So right now, current state, the ISO rules require that an asset must be capable of providing a minimum of 15 megawatts of reg, 10 megawatts of spin, and 5 megawatts of sup for each individual product. The issue is obviously the minimum asset requirements to qualify for to provide OR in Alberta may be a barrier to participation for small DERs. A recent ASO technical study indicates that OR market thresholds in Alberta could potentially be lowered to similar thresholds in the US. As I'm sure most of you are aware, FERC Order 841, FERC Order 2222 has most of the ISO RTOs in the United States moving down to around the 100 kilowatt level. The ISO is currently at 10, 15, 10, and 5. So we've got a gap there to close. Next slide. So the recommendation is to lower the asset qualification thresholds to provide reserves for regulating spin and sup from the current requirement of 15, 10, and 5 megawatts, respectively, down to 1 megawatt. It's worth noting that small DERs intending to participate in the OR market will still be required to meet the appropriate technical and SCADA requirements for the purposes of qualification. So I just want to make sure that's clear. The rationale behind the decision, the current rule is a barrier to participation for small DERs in the OR market. Reducing this threshold may increase competition in the OR market. Inclusion of small DERs is consistent with the FEOC operation of markets. The recommendation of 1 megawatt, like before, is or greater is due to the IT system limitations. Right now, we don't dispatch infractions. And I also wanted to be clear, this recommendation is going to be included in the OR review market initiative that's coming up in 2021, and any changes to the ISO rules will be consulted on with stakeholders in accordance with AUC Rule 17. Questions?
Thanks, Darren. And I'm just going to get Erwin to unmute your mic. And you, I know you've got a few questions here that hopefully we can help clarify. So Erwin, over to you.
Thanks. And I, again, maybe this is a little bit more of a wisdom question here. And I, it seems to me that there's a lot of real-time experiments going on in New York, in California, Texas, around DERs and the value of DERs and how they can kind of bid into markets and time of use, net metering, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just wondering here, just sort of, just in terms of other jurisdictions to say, you know, for an energy market, are there other jurisdictions that are quote unquote, maybe getting it right? And sort of where are we on the maturity here in terms of just looking at what's being done elsewhere and getting some, I guess maybe consolidation around best practice, if I can put it that way. Or maybe everything you've articulated here is sort of moving in that direction.
All right. Thanks, Erwin. Where to start with this? So as far as DER penetration in the ISO market, we're lagging behind North America as far as penetration. So we do have an opportunity to learn from the US operations. So yeah, we are paying attention very closely to what the US is doing and what we intend to learn from them. As far as the energy market goes, we're in an energy only market. A lot of these US markets are capacity markets. So it's not a request, it's not really a question of do they submit offers, it's how they get paid. So their ability to actually get a capacity payment. So it's not really apples, it's apples to oranges. But we believe with your question was with regards to the energy markets, we believe we're 99% of the way there, maybe more. When we're talking about requiring small DERs to submit offers in the energy market, we think it's unlikely that anyone below 1 megawatt would wish to submit an offer and be subject to dispatch. But we will be looking at the US markets for sure and continue to be looking at the US markets for best practices.
Okay, is there any market right now or any jurisdiction right now that sort of stands out in terms of, again, quote unquote, maybe getting it right or leading by example, whether that's North America or Australia or?
That's a pretty subjective question, but yeah, I think when you're talking about DER penetration, I think PJM and the CAISO obviously have probably the highest penetration of these types of assets. So those are a couple of key markets we'd be looking at.
Okay. I think I'll just add on to what Darren was saying. Kind of just reiterating from an energy market perspective that our market is different than other markets. So sometimes what other markets doing is not relevant or applicable to our market. We did look at other markets with respect to thresholds in the OR market. And that's where I think we learned, and Darren will go through this in the next section here, that our thresholds may have been a little high and they could benefit from reduction. So I think that's one of the things that we learned and we look to as DER penetration increases.
Okay, thanks, Erwin. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And we're just going to hop on over to Brian. I know you had a question earlier that we weren't able to address. I'm just going to also ask you to unmute your mic. So you're live now.
Hey, sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yep.
Sorry, I can't hear you anymore. So I'll remute, I guess.
Okay, sorry about that, Brian. We'll just read out your question again. Does recommendation number 3 apply to applicable projects connected to either DFO and TFO or only DFO connected DER?
Sorry, just give me a sec. I'm trying to understand the question. Is it the question, just so I understand, the question is, would it apply to distribution only, or does it apply to transmission?
Yes.
Connected generation?
Either one.
Either one. And it would apply to both. Both distribution and transmission. Although I don't believe we have currently or plan or likely will have sub 5 megawatt assets on the transmission system. So it's likely distribution system, but anything's possible.
Okay, great. Thank you, Darren. And we've just got another question from Leandro. When is it anticipated the voluntary participation will be implemented in 2021?
Well, we have to go through the AUC Rule 17 process. So that will take probably, if I had to guess, likely a year, depending on how that works. We're only looking at a very small change. We're changing that rule from May not to May. So I don't anticipate too many issues with that at this point. Rupa, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, so when we're looking to implement the changes, we'll coordinate it with other market initiatives and see how it's that's affected.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we just have a couple questions from Matthew Davis. So I'm just going to give you permission to speak now. You should be unmuted. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hi, Darren. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you betcha.
Okay, excellent. Just two questions. One is around going back. I just didn't have time to write in on recommendation number two. Around the choice to voluntarily participate in the energy market, can you describe what that would look like? Is that, you know, if you elect to submit an offer, you are now obligated to submit an offer every hour for a defined period of time? Or is it more along the lines of if you feel like it on that day? And then my second question is about OR in terms of what sort of visibility would the ISO provide for small DER participation to the market? You know, would they be included on the CSD page where the ISO indicates the contingency reserve dispatch level?
Okay, so let's tackle the first question. Because it's a voluntary participation, if these assets wish to submit offers, they can submit offers at any time they want. If they want to submit it for 2 hours, submit it for 2 hours. There's no obligation to submit past that. So it's purely up to them when they participate. Is there anything further to that? To that particular part of the question?
No, I think, yeah, that at least clarifies the intent that you guys have there.
Okay.
The second
question or recommendation, visibility. So yeah, we'll be looking at if you are participating in the markets, we'll be looking at transparency of the market. So we haven't on the implementation side looked into how that's going to look yet, but we would be looking at market transparency is of course very important.
Thank you.
Matthew, I just wanted to just clarify the must offer or the voluntary offer participation. So we're still kind of working through some of it, but we'd probably make it consistent. So I just to clarify, what we would expect is if you voluntarily choose to offer, it is a voluntary decision to offer. But if you make that decision to do so, then you are expected to continue to offer. And if you choose not to, then you would just continue to get full price for whatever megawatts you output.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because I was thinking that, the voluntary participation coming in and out of the market could be a little disruptive.
Yeah,
I guess that sort of disruptive nature, like what we tried to solve with Quick Hits years ago.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that it was clear because I.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Matthew. And we actually just have a few, two other questions, I think, along a similar line. So I'll just read those out. And Darren, if you we'll pass it over to you. The first one from Sarah, does the 1 megawatt proposed asset qualification threshold to provide OR include an aggregated resource meeting the 1 megawatt threshold?
Yes. So just like if we're talking, Sarah, if we're talking SUP-L, yeah, just like you aggregate today to meet the 5 megawatt threshold for SUP-L, you could aggregate to meet the 1 megawatt threshold for SUP-L.
Okay, great. Thanks, Darren. And then another question just from Jason. What if the smaller DERs are aggregated as a fleet to have 5 megawatts or larger capacity in the aggregate? Will that be allowed?
Well, yes, that will be allowed, but currently aggregation is limited to very specific behind the same feeder, according to the rule, according to loss factor rules. So provided they meet the requirements of aggregation, yes, that would be allowed.
Okay, thanks, Darren. And we just have a question here from Adam. Adam, I'm just going to get you to unmute your mic. So I've passed it over to you. If you don't mind asking your question live.
Thank you. So this question is sort of similar to before. If we're talking about a category outside of the OR, in other words, for microgens to be responsive to ASO needs for short-term supply or load changes, have you explored any open ADR or other communication, you know, over internet-based approaches to allowing participation by smaller DERs?
I think right now that's outside the scope of this presentation, but I do believe we're addressing that through this SCADA, and I don't know if Rob or perhaps Ping want to add to that, but no, currently we're not looking at that. We are doing an OR market review in 2021, so I suggest if you do have some OR solutions there, that would be a good time to bring them up.
Christine, you're on mute.
I am not managing my mute button well today. Thanks, everyone. We just have another question from Herbert. Herbert, I'm also going to get you to unmute your mic and ask your question, and we might pass it over to Rob. But Herbert, you're unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, super. So you want me to ask my question?
Sure, if you don't mind.
Okay, I'm just going to read it for you. Transmission and distribution systems are monopolies. Monopolies don't face competition, so the missing discipline needs to be provided by appropriate regulation. How are interconnection costs regulated?
Yeah, so thanks, Bert, for your question. Yeah, obviously the DFOs, the main DFOs in Alberta are regulated by the AUC. So there are some DFOs that are not regulated by the AUC, City Lethbridge, for example. But the main large ones are regulated by the AUC on how their costs are regulated for the distribution side of that. And then from a transmission perspective, the ISO is, you know, we have our transmission tariff, which is regulated by the AUC, and the TFO is to the extent on there is also regulated by the AUC from that perspective. So I don't know if that provides you.
Well, in theory it does, but in practice it doesn't seem to be working.
Meaning?
Like sometimes the interconnection costs we're getting here in Alberta are $250,000 a kilometer, whereas Saskatchewan has got them pegged at $40,000 a kilometer.
Okay.
Yeah, the regulator is doing his job there.
Okay, so I think what you're saying, so then if I interpret your question properly, Bert, then that would be for a DER, that would be interconnection costs from the DFO. Is that correct?
Right, but so this issue was raised with the distribution hearing back in July last year, and it was never addressed. And in fact, the report that came out didn't even touch on it. It's a big issue that's being hidden under the carpet. In fact, the way the monopoly company is remunerated is by a return on capital. So the more money they spend, the more profit they make. So they're incented to charge as much as possible. So it has to be regulated. It's not being regulated properly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I can't really comment a whole lot on that simply because it is in the DFO's, jurisdiction for that. But I just noted from that.
Well, I just appreciate the opportunity to bring this question forward here, and I know it's an unresolved issue, and that we document it. I appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah, no. Thanks,
Bert. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks so much for your comment.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bert. We just have another question, Darren from Irwin. Any DER sandbox efforts to force penetration, look at aggregation, or look at DER penetration levels ahead of organic take up?
I am currently not aware of any DER sandbox efforts to force penetration, no.
Okay, great. And a question here from Paul. Can you please elaborate on the voluntary participation in the energy market? Upon decision to enter, what is the commitment period to provide offers, and are these offer requirements 24/7 for that period?
Christine, I can take this one. I think I just want to clarify what we mean by voluntary participation. So just kind of to back up a little bit. So right now there's a must offer requirement for any assets that have a maximum capability of 5 megawatts or above. So what we're proposing here is to allow assets that are under 5 megawatts to voluntarily participate. So what does that mean? That means that if they choose, they can, and I'll explain what choose means as well, they can put in an offer just like they were 5 megawatts or above. So you have a must offer, must comply requirement. That choice doesn't mean that one day you choose not to must offer and the next day you choose to must offer. So if you choose to voluntarily participate, you make that decision kind of as part of your application, or if you're already an asset, we would do it during the asset setup. And once you make that choice, then you would be expected to put in offer requirements just like you were 5 megawatts or above. And the benefit to those assets is that they can, when you get a dispatch, that's when you would provide megawatts to the grid. So basically it would be dispatch and active market participation instead of passive participation, which means the passive market participation is essentially you turn on and off based on your choice if there is not a must offer requirement, and you would still get based on pool price. So I hope that clarifies voluntary participation.
Okay, thanks so much. I think we'll move on now. And Darren, if you want to head back to your slides, and we'll address these questions in a moment.
Okay, I apologize. This is a bit of a busy slide, but it's important to walk through the process. So currently, as we said many times in this presentation, assets with an MC of 5 are required to submit offers in the energy market. The current minimum asset capability requirements for qualification in the OR are at least 5 megawatts. In other words, 5 for SUP, 10 for SPIN, 15 for REG. Participation in the OR market is voluntary, whereas participation in the energy market is mandatory for all source assets with an MC of 5 or greater. Consequently, those voluntarily participating in the OR market are also currently required to submit offers in the energy market. So there is no rule requiring the two, but it's just they overlap because of the minimum size requirements. So the issue, if the ISO recommends that the requirement to submit offers in the energy market remains at the current size threshold of 5 or greater, and the minimum asset capability requirement for qualification in the OR market is lowered to 1 megawatt, the combined effect of these two recommendations is that smallders voluntarily participating in the OR market will not be required to submit offers in the energy market. Next slide, please. So the recommendation allows smallders who are participating in the OR market without a requirement to submit offers in the energy market. The rationale is the ISO rules do not require concurrent bids and offers in the energy market when participating in the OR market, and a new rule requirement is not needed. Mandatory energy market participation, if participating in the OR market, may be considered a barrier to participation in the OR market for smallders. And this, we hope, increases competition in the OR market and recognizes there's little benefit right now from increased competition in the energy market. Are there any questions?
Nothing that's come up.
Okay, next slide, please. So now we're talking into DER aggregation in the energy market. So the ability to aggregate is somewhat limited by the requirements of the loss factor rule, in such that individual source assets or aggregated source asset, they have to be downstream of a single substation and can be metered through a single measurement point on the transmission system. So the issue, minimum asset size requirements to submit offers in the energy market are a barrier to participation for distributed energy resources with a maximum capability below 1 megawatt. Next slide, please. Our recommendation is to discontinue exploration of aggregation options for small DERs in the energy market. So rationale, we actually expect that the recommendation to allow voluntary participation in the energy market for small DERs will enable most DERs that are capable and willing to compete in the energy market the opportunity to do so. We don't expect a lot of participation in the energy market from DERs 1 to 5 megawatts, and certainly don't expect a lot from any assets below 1 megawatt. We think we're 99.9% of the way there with regards to the energy market. There seem to be low support and interest from industry stakeholders in pursuing aggregation in the energy market. Further exploration may be initiated if stakeholders identify the need and priority to proceed. Let's do questions for both the energy market and the OR market together. So let's just go to the next slide. So small DER aggregation in the OR market. The current state, minimum size threshold to qualify in the OR market is 5 megs. Aggregation in the OR market was primarily being reviewed for the purpose of meeting the minimum size thresholds. Sync assets participate in SUPL are currently permitted to aggregate subject to operational proximity, and it's pretty wide operational proximity. So SUPL is already allowed to do this, and this is where we think most of the interest in OR would be from the SUPL. So the issue, if minimum size thresholds are reduced to 1 megawatt, there may be a barrier of participation for assets under 1 megawatt as new technologies continue to emerge, such as electric vehicles and home and commercial energy storage. Next slide. Our recommendation is to currently discontinue exploration of aggregation options for small DERs in the OR market. Our rationale, the recommendation to lower the OR qualification thresholds to 1 megawatt will significantly reduce the need for aggregation in the OR market for most small DERs. So we think we're probably 95% of the way here by just reducing the thresholds to 1 megawatt. Most assets below 1 megawatt currently most likely would participate in the SUP-L product. Most of these small generators don't have governors. They're unlikely to qualify for spin. So we think with the combination of us allowing SUP-L for load with aggregation there and lowering the OR asset qualification thresholds to 1 megawatt, we're pretty much there. Stakeholder interest in advancing these changes was somewhat limited, and the ASA will be conducting stakeholder sessions in 2021 regarding OR market design. So if there is suggestions there, we'll be taking them then. And then one last comment, and this I think would just kind of reflects what one of the commenters said, is we will be looking for best practices from the US as we continue to learn. Right now, our penetration in Alberta for electric vehicles and home and small commercial energy storage is quite low compared. So we've got some time to learn from down south, and we'll be taking that time to do so. We'll take questions now for both DER aggregation and energy and OR.
Great. Thanks, Darren. And Erwin, sorry. I'm just going to get you to unmute again and ask your question to Darren. So you should be unmuted now, hopefully. There.
Yeah, and I think right now, if I look at what's happening here in the province, I see a lot of sort of behind the meter efforts, whether it's DERs and batteries, essentially not wanting to put power to the grid because it attracts sort of the attention. And then you're into sort of falling into existing programs and restrictions and et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to get a general sense of customers putting DERs within their sort of energy consumption requirements, but keeping it behind the meter versus pushing energy onto the grid. What are you seeing in Alberta?
Okay. We're seeing a little bit of both. With regards to your comment of behind the meter and not put it on the grid, I mean, this presentation is about wholesale market participation and actually exporting onto the grid. But yeah, certainly we are, I think there are some hybrid solutions out there being developed right now where they're not. But I'm not sure I understand. I understand your comment, but I'm not sure I understand the question.
Oh, okay. So for example, here, if there's a customer putting in a 600 kilowatt system, a solar system, they would fall into a particular program around partners in generation program, right? That has a 100 kilowatt sort of threshold for, if it's less than that, it's sort of net metering. If it's above that, it's PGPP, but customers can install large systems as long as they're not pushing power onto the grid, do it all behind the meter, and they don't see any of that integration study, integration cost, or anything. And quite frankly, it's, I think to a degree, it's biasing DERs to be behind the meter only. How does that get recognized by the utility? How does that get recognized in terms of forecasts around energy growth? I mean, I'm just wondering, maybe there's a particular barrier here that doesn't exist in Alberta, but understanding energy growth and then how much of that will be met at the point of consumption, and then how much of that will also be pushed back onto the grid, I think is a really important distinction when you're looking at forecast.
Maybe I can provide a comment here for Erwin. Erwin, we do take into account a lot of those factors that you're mentioning in our modeling for DR penetration. And what you'll see is coming out in our upcoming 2021 LTO, it's that we'll share some of the major drivers that we saw, comparatively speaking, whether they are policy drivers or they're, you know, cost-related, you know, costs at the DFO side. So stay tuned, and if you want to reach out and talk more about different studies, there's a couple of studies that we've done over the last few years related to the delivered cost of electricity and such that are available on our website. I strongly encourage you to look at that to get a better sense of how the picture is being painted here in Alberta.
Great, thank you.
No problem.
I think you're on mute again there, Christine.
Again. I was just going to pass it on to Michael Smedding. If you don't mind asking your question live, I'm just going to get you to unmute as well. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Sound check?
Sounds good.
We can hear you.
You're not awesome. Muted.
So I have one question. I phrased it two ways in the chat there. It's around the... if the AESO is expecting an increased competition in the OR market due to the lower threshold of 1 megawatt, would the AESO be expecting, or is there a potential to see an element of generation defection from larger generators that have only connected as such for the benefits of the OR market and are perhaps looking to now or would now escape from the energy market? Or maybe rather, in other words, by making this change, are you introducing an unfair advantage to those generation providers only looking to participate in the OR market and do not have interest in participating in the energy market? Thank you.
Okay, let's. You got a few questions and comments in there. With regards to an unfair advantage, the OR participants, whether they're 1 megawatt, 2 megawatt, or 100 megawatts, will all be held to the same. They'll all be held to the same standards, regardless of size. So it's a OR is a it's a reliability product, and as such, so there'll be no unfair advantage. Given. To the extent a large OR supplier defecting from the energy market, I don't see how that's possible. Currently, we require generators 5 megawatts or greater, whether they're on the distribution system or the transmission system, to submit offers. So I don't see how that's possible unless I'm missing something or not understanding your question.
Sure, and I can elaborate a little. You could have a generator perhaps in the range close to or above 5 megawatts, effectively reduce their generation output. Or are you restricting the definition to nameplate generation size?
Well, maximum capability with regards to Rule 203.1 refers to it can be gross or net. So if there's load associated on site and they're not capable of providing more than 5 megawatts, then that's possible. But we would be looking at in that instance. So if you ever produced more than 5 megawatts, we'd be requiring you to submit. So I don't think we're not too concerned at this point about that, but we'll certainly keep our eyes open for it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much, Michael. So we'll just move on to Raj's question. Would demand response aggregation 1 to 5 megawatts be allowed to participate in the OR market?
Response. So currently we have SEPL, which is supplemental for loads, participating in the OR market, and that's at the 5 megawatt threshold. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, yes, 1 to 5 megawatts would be allowed to participate, provided they can meet the technical requirements to do so.
Thanks, Raj. And just a question from Brittany, when this year does the ISO expect to start the review of the OR market design?
That's expected later in this year. We've already started the internal review, so we expect to go out to participants later in the year. I am not clear yet on exactly the timeline, but probably closer to Q3.
Thanks so much, Rupa. And Murray, I saw that you had raised your hand. Did you have any follow-up questions?
I was trying to find my unmute.
Yeah.
But no, I do not have any other follow-up questions.
Okay. Thanks so much, Murray. So we'll just go on to the last question here from Richard Penn. I think we'll pass this over to you, Rupa. Doesn't the voluntary participation lead to problems with estimating short-term forecasting?
So the intent of voluntary participation in the energy market was to reduce barriers to entry to the extent possible if participants want to participate in the energy market. I think I should clarify that's specific to the energy market, and I don't want to confuse the OR market. OR market is still, you still have to qualify, you voluntarily participate, you're not required to put in a must offer for the OR market. With respect to forecasting, I think we are we will continue to review that in upcoming DER roadmap work.
Thanks very much, Rupa. And that looks like that's all of the open questions right now. So we'll pass it back to you, Darren.
Next slide, please. I think Rupa is going to take over from here.
Yeah, so the next steps, as I kind of indicated earlier in the presentation, stakeholders are to provide written feedback by March 17th. And then the ISO will respond to the stakeholder feedback and develop a final recommendation in April. And then the ISO rule development process will initiate, but it'll be coordinated with other market initiatives. Since the changes are minimal, we want to make sure that we coordinate it with other market initiatives so that we have the best strategy for moving forward with the AUC process. Is there any additional questions?
Look like it. If you do have additional questions, feel free to type them in the chat or raise your hand. We are ending a little bit earlier than we anticipated, so we do have some time for discussion. So we'll just wait a few moments to see if there's any additional questions. No, looks like we're all okay. So we'll pass it over to you, Rob. I think you're doing a little wrap up for us.
Yep. Great, thanks, Christine. Thanks everyone for today's session. Obviously I want to extend our thank you. Obviously your input and feedback is very important to us to help inform our decisions as we go forward. I also want to thank all the panel members and support staff that helped the ISO put the session on today. I know there's a significant amount of work that goes into preparing and delivering one of these sessions. So thanks everyone, very much appreciate that. I would like I mentioned at the very beginning of the session, We are planning a little short poll here, and it's all around feedback on the process of our engagement. And so I could kindly request that you hang around to take a few moments to respond to those questions. That would be very much appreciated. So with that, I'm just going to wish everyone a great day and enjoy the weather, as it looks like it's a nice day out there for us today. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much, Rob. And yet the poll is just live now, so we'll just leave it up for a few minutes. But thanks again, everybody, for your participation today. There was a great discussion, and we hope to see you at future ISO events. So thanks again, everybody. Have a great day.